Matt Rosenberg is author of a new book, What Next Chicago? And let's see, the rest of it is Notes of a Pissed Off Native Son. They didn't censor your cover, did they?
No.
Oh, good.
No, not at all. And, you know, and my editor said, make sure to explain why you're pissed off, Matt. So I did.
I was telling you before the show, I've been to Ed DeBevick's, the home of Sassy Service, and I hope people visit there. I'm glad it's still around. But, I mean, there is something cool about, the Windy City was because of politicians, but you do get the wind there because of the way the skyscrapers are sort of near Lake Michigan there. But I mean, going to Navy Pier, there was just going to a sporting event in Chicago. I mean, there's something mm-hmm. special about it. So why did they ruin it?
You know, you raise something super important that I've been thinking about lately. I express it in terms of a duality. There's the good and the bad, but each are exaggerated. The city is a very grand place. I've been back there now. This year I moved back there last year to do field work for the book, but back in Chicago this fall, downtown, watching live blues and jazz concerts, looking at that great skyline, knowing that, 85 or 90% of the people who live there are upstanding, talented, creative, successful people, looking at the architecture and the neighborhoods. I mean, this is a city to be reckoned with. It always has been. But at the same time, it's going to hell in a handbasket because we have a tyranny of the minority in Chicago. We have a percentage of our households, there's about 1 million households in the city of Chicago and 2.7 million people. There's a percentage of our households that are living without something that I call moral authority, which is just what you would imagine it to be. And of course, it includes parents who are doing their jobs. And so we have a certain percentage of young men basically running off the rails. We have people who don't know about impulse control. And so we have bullets flying for the most stupid of reasons. And we have streets that are just not safe anymore. And it's taken a huge toll on the city. And then you factor in the result of decades and decades of progressive democratic governance. It just hasn't worked out. The schools are failing. The county court system has turned into a revolving door for criminals. The fiscal management of the city government is just dropped out. The bottom has dropped out. We've got a staggering amount of public employee pension debt. So, yeah, there's a lot of stuff that is piled up. Even though at the same time, there's still wonderful, wonderful things about this city.
Is it, you remember the old analogy about, you could put a frog in boiling water and he'd react, but if you mm-hmm. put him in a, tin of water and just slowly heated it up, he'd swim around happy till he boiled to death. Is that kind of how, in a lot of these, because Chicago's, endemic of a lot of the big cities, right? Baltimore is going down the tubes, mm-hmm. San Francisco, mm-hmm. Los Angeles, Atlanta. I mean, you look at this fracas they got going on there, where Buckhead, the affluent mm-hmm. suburb, wants to
right.
secede from Atlanta. They're trying to make it racial, but then you got a city next door that just incorporated and said, "Yeah, but we're all black and we want it out of Atlanta too." So it's not just racial, right?
No, it's not. And in fact, black people are leaving Chicago about as fast as they can, and they're moving to all kinds of different places, to Atlanta, to Tennessee, to Utah, to Indiana. It goes on and on. The frog has been getting slowly boiled to death, but the heat has been turned up. So now the frog is almost leaping out of the water, would be how I would take that analogy and apply it to what's going on right now. Just in the last few weeks, even since I published this book, we've seen a remarkable increase in murders and violent crimes in Chicago, we've seen further radical actions from the county prosecutor who just doesn't want to prosecute. It seems they find technical legalistic explanations for not charging guys who've been involved in horrible shootings resulting in murder. We have armed robbery crews popping out of vehicles in areas that were previously thought to be safe, just running up to people on the sidewalk to relieve them of their cell phones and wallets and shopping bags and backpacks. There were 14 different people who were robbed in that way by one crew over the course of a few hours. You had a guy loose on public transportation with a hammer going at passengers, and he got caught and arrested, and it turned out he'd done this bit before. You know, it just, each day you're wondering, okay, what's it going to be now? And that's not a good place for a city to be.
So, Matt, I'm having trouble here, and I understand being pissed off about it, but apparently they're not enough because you got a mayor that you sit there and you look at, she can't even connect dots. But apparently the people who vote for her can't connect dots either.
Well, this is the question that pops up, and it's a legitimate one. Why do the people stand for this? And a couple of things are going on here. Number one, there's kind of a massive denial. Even people who are feeling the heat don't want to step back and say, you know what, progressive democratic governance is failing in these big cities and in our big city. Number two, people kind of hunker down, right? They maybe buy a gun to protect themselves. Most people, of course, don't misuse guns, but the ones that do have an outsized effect on public safety. And then also, people don't vote. They don't engage. They forget that citizenship is a two-way street, right? It's not just about what you're entitled to as a taxpayer or a citizen. It's also about the responsibility you have to give back. And part of that giving back, in my opinion, involves watching what's going on, stepping up, being part of the debate. So I think part of the reason this happens is people don't want to bother with public policy. They think of it as something wonky, something detached from their lives. But, you know, if you see your county prosecutor declining to prosecute violent criminals all too often, you need to step up and be vocal about it. If you see your local teachers union, you know, trying to further restrict school choice, you need to step up and speak out about that and organize, run another candidate. If you see that your mayor has become totally ineffective and is a huge part of the problem, you need to be part of that grassroots groundswell that, for instance, in New York, resulted in the election of a guy who could begin to turn things around, Eric Adams. You know, the guy's not perfect, but here we have an elected leader, soon to be elected, in the final runoff, who's, he's a black man, he's a former cop, he supports police, he supports school choice. Well, I think cities like Chicago need their own version of an Eric Adams. He's a darn sight better than Bill de Blasio was for New York, you know?
Yeah, that's a little... Well, here's the other part of this, Matt, that as you were talking about people, you know, recognizing they had a problem, I look at the... And not just in Chicago, in a lot of cities, I look at the relationship between the voters and the citizenry, whether they participate in voting or not, and the administrations in these cities, the DAs, the mayors, the city councils, and it's almost like an abusive spouse relationship where you just keep going back for more. And it almost is like that, isn't it?
It is. And, you know, some of this comes down to political merchandising, as unfortunate as that is. In a city like Chicago and a city like New New York or San Francisco or Seattle or Portland and many others, you know, forget about Republicans, you know. And myself, I'm a cantankerous independent. I vote for the person and their policies, not the party. But you're never going to have a viable Republican challenger for any major office. There was one who ran against Kim Fox, our disastrous Cook County district attorney in Chicago, the one who just really doesn't like to prosecute crimes very much, always finds a technical explanation for why it can't be done. And a Republican ran against her in 2020 after her tendencies were well known, after the revolving door policy was very clear, and she creamed them. And so, yeah, it is like an abusive spouse syndrome. So I say it comes back to political marketing and packaging. And, you know, don't run a Republican, start a new party. I know that's a little bit out there. I think in Chicago, and probably there was something at one time called the Reform Party. Be thinking along those lines is what I'm starting to believe we might need to do. Run a Reform Party slate. Technically, the elections are nonpartisan in Chicago, so you... But, you know, we just had, in 2019, we had six Democratic Socialists of America elected to the city council. So they're able, basically, to go out there and run on a party identity. So there are ways to do it, even if you officially can't declare for the election that you belong to this or that party. So we need people who will commit to a reform agenda, a tough-on-crime agenda, a school choice agenda, and a fiscal prudence agenda, as well as a clean government, good government, that stands against the endemic corruption that has controlled so much of what goes on in Chicago. We need a Reform Party slate across the board, city council and mayor, to step up and run for office and say, no more, we can't take this anymore. You know, will that happen? I don't know. I think it kind of has to start at the community level, in the churches, in the nonprofits, in the community groups, and the neighborhood groups. So it's a long, hard row to hoe, but the alternative is to move out of town.
Yeah, and there are places to move. I think people are figuring that out. Matt, I want to. You touched on something I want to get into in our next segment about there are some bully pulpits out there, and I kind of scratch my head as to why they haven't been more vocal, or maybe they don't get any coverage. I don't know. Matt Rosenberg is the author of a new book. We'll tell you how to get it too. What Next, Chicago? And this is actually, I guess, aimed at a lot of cities. Notes from a Pissed Off Native Son. More with Matt coming up.
Dr. Porter of Functional Chiropractic talks about pediatric chiropractic care.
I think that chiropractic is best used as prevention. At Functional Chiropractic, about 30% of our patients are kids. Parents want the best for their kids, so they get them checked early. Chiropractic is about improving the nervous system. We see a lot of young kids dealing with neck pain and back pain or headaches, but it goes well beyond. We have not just biomechanic aches and pains, but that same pressure on the nervous system that we can kind of feel through the muscles and joints has a lasting effect on how our body regulates itself. I would rather have my kids well adjusted throughout their life so that they stay healthy. In fact, our motto is stay healthy, get adjusted. Go straight to our website, funchiropractic.com.
Functional Chiropractic, funchiropractic.com.
Matt Rosenberg is the author of a new book. Gee, you're not going to guess what this is. What Next, Chicago? Notes of a Pissed Off Native Son. And look, what's happening in Chicago is happening all over the country. It's not just Chicago. My question, you touched on this earlier about neighborhood groups and churches. Look, the Catholic diocese is huge in Chicago, right? Mm-hmm. That's one. You have major mm-hmm. corporations with their headquarters in Chicago. Do they not have any mm-hmm. influence? Or you know, I figured out a long time ago, corporations are basically They're cowards and they're whores. And it really comes down to, we're not going to say anything that'll keep us from making money. But they don't even see that. Yeah. And I'm guessing that some of these major corporations have probably lost some of their employees to crime in Chicago. Wouldn't you think?
We're starting to see some real concern coming from top business executives in Chicago. They can no longer just do the usual posturing, throwing tens of millions of dollars at diversity initiatives and calling it good. That kind of stuff just isn't having enough of a positive effect, and it kind of hides from the reality that equity is something you earn. It's not really something you can pass out like a door prize. And that's where corporate America has had its head on urban issues. So why don't more businesses step up? What about the churches? Those are good questions. I think we're starting to see a turnabout from some of the business leaders of Chicago. But you know, what will they do in the end? They will get behind some candidate for mayor that they think will be a little bit more effective, but maybe that person will end up just being kind of the tool of, you know, this establishment or that establishment. You've basically got two in Chicago. You've got the progressive mafia, and then you've got, you know, the corporate interests. As for the churches, I think there's some hope there. The problem is, and this is probably reflected nationally, but in Chicago, churches are closing. Parishioners have moved away. There are more and more, and we have beautiful old churches in Chicago. They're a rich part of our history, our culture, and our architecture. They're splendid, splendid, awe-inspiring buildings. I walk around taking pictures of them. But the parishioners are moving to the suburbs or to other states. People are less church going on the whole. However, and in my book, I document some of this, there are very active parishes in some of the most challenged neighborhoods. In one neighborhood called Woodlawn, there's a pastor, an African-American pastor named Reverend Corey Brooks, who I write about in the book. He does all kinds of things at New Beginnings Church and with his nonprofit. A lot of it is focused on career and technical training for the kinds of jobs that are appealing to people in the community. So there's a lot of work training people to work in construction. Recently, they graduated a class of 18 certified black female electricians. I think, you know, you got to love stuff like that and want more of it. So there's a whole bunch of other stuff going on. There's quite a bit in my book about faith and family. There are couples that came from very hard backgrounds that turned their lives around, are raising children in Christian homes, in Christian homeschooled environments. There's quite a bit going on that usually does not get reported upon. So there are success stories. There are even single mothers who are finding the religious faith helps them raise their sons in a way that the sons are able to succeed. You know, charter schools are playing a role in that, where black mentors can have a very positive impact on young black men who are almost inherently at risk in a city like Chicago. So there is hope. The question is whether it can reach a kind of a critical mass. And without good political leadership, and more community engagement, it will be difficult.
Well, you know, you mentioned New York. You get any kind of new leadership and things start turning around. Look, the one beautiful thing the Founding Fathers gave us was, you know, this, I always marvel at whether they would have expected us to have 50 incubators out there. But we borrow from each other. If Chicago figures it out, or Philadelphia figures it out, or Seattle figures it out, whichever city does, it starts getting some play, right? And then other cities adopt it. And then people start moving back. Because if you don't have, part of the infrastructure of any city is all the talent. If they leave, you get what you get, right?
Mm-hmm. And I think good news can spread, just as you say. And soaking bad news, people are going to where the action is. You know, I have a theory. It starts with the National Hockey League, believe it or not. When I moved to Chicago in the mid-1960s, my father used to take me to see the Chicago Blackhawks in the old Chicago Stadium, kind of this beer-soaked cathedral of noise. It was a great place to be. There were six teams in the NHL then, and Chicago was the southernmost and the westernmost. Picture that. Now, all these years later, you look at where the NHL has teams and how many of them there are all over, you know, the south and the west of the United States. We've got NHL teams in Florida, Tennessee, the Carolinas, California, of course, Texas, even Arizona. And this is where the population has been moving to also, because the cities and the suburban regions in these states are business friendly. The taxes are lower. The streets are safer in the big cities. The schools actually work. So, you know, your political elites in places like New York and Chicago and San Francisco tend to sneer at places like Jacksonville, Florida, or Dallas, Greater Dallas, which is poised to surpass Chicago as the nation's third largest metropolitan region by 2030. They tend to sneer at places like Phoenix, but they shouldn't, because these people know something about competition.
Yeah, and we got to get competition back into this thing. Anyway, the part of it is these urban progressive governments. They just keep doing it over and over again. It's kind of like socialism in general, right? It's just never been tried. They're, in Venezuela, they're failing because they hadn't done it right. We'll see. Matt Rosenberg is the author of a new book, What Next, Chicago? Notes of a Pissed Off Native Son. If you want to reach out to Matt, or if you want to get the book, Matt, where do they go?
Sure. Folks can find the book online only at either Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com, and they can read more and also reach out to me through my website, which is ChicagoSchooled.com, and schooled is spelled with a K.
Oh, you're really messing them up, aren't you?
I know. Well, actually, if they put it in the regular way, they can get through to the website, too. So ChicagoSchooled.com, and they can read more of my writing about Chicago, some long-form essays. There's also a Buy the Book page there in case they missed it at Amazon and Barnes & Noble. And I'm on Twitter as well, at Chicago School with a K. So I hope folks will dial me up and share their thoughts and stay in touch.